support for Palestine from the British people.
Let me just ask, in the interest of balance, is there anyone here who welcomes what Michael Gove had to say and supports what he had to say?
What about Lee?
Not a hand up, okay.
The British government is in a bind. It can't define extremism, and yet it wants to pretend that it can. It claims that its new policy contains a, quote, new definition of extremism. But there was never an old definition, and the text they've published is not a definition either. There is still no legal definition of extremism, and this is why the government are at pains to point out that this definition is not statutory and has no effect on the existing criminal law. The reason for this is that the government knows that if they try and create a statutory definition, it will be subject to legal challenge, which it will most probably lose. There's a nervousness about this, which is intriguing. First of all, Michael Gove named 5 extremist organizations under parliamentary privilege because he knows he would be subject to legal action were he to name them outside the House. Secondly, though the aim here is to destroy and disrupt the Palestine solidarity movement, no primarily Palestine-related groups were named. But pro-Palestine groups, Friends of Al-Aqsa, was named in drafts of the speech leaked to the media. The government were too nervous even to name them in Parliament. Gove stated in the Commons that Islamism is a totalitarian ideology which calls for the establishment of an Islamic State governed by Sharia law. He named 3 groups, the Muslim Association of Britain, CAGE and MEND, all perfectly legal organizations. MEND immediately challenged Gove to, quote, repeat his claims outside of Parliament and without the protection of parliamentary privilege, to provide the evidence that MEND has called for the establishment of an Islamic State governed by Sharia law. Even normally staunch allies such as government advisor John Mann have criticized the policy. The division is between those pushing for a Likudnik scorched-earth approach and those who favor a sophisticated engagement strategy. This is not just a political and strategic difference, but a question of defending the millions in state and Zionist funding plowed into the maintenance of hundreds of jobs in sophisticated engagement, such as the interfaith industry. Underlying all of this is the danger that the definition best fits genocidal Zionist groups and their supporters within government, most notably Michael Gove himself. The penetration and capture of key elements of security policy by the Zionist is nothing if it is not, as the new so-called definition puts it, an attempt to undermine, overturn, or replace the UK system of liberal parliamentary democracy and democratic rights in the service of attempting to negate or destroy the fundamental rights and freedoms of others, most obviously Muslims and Palestinians and their supporters.
Dr. Layla, I mean, some people are suggesting that this is just an attempt to proscribe organisations by the back door. What do you think about that?
Absolutely agree with that, because if you look at from a legal perspective, there is nothing that these organisations are doing that is illegal that could be used in a way against them to shut them down. And this is one way, as I say, you know, this new definition of extremism, it's not statutory, but it doesn't mean that it won't have impact. This will have impact on the ground. Of course it will. If you look at charities, for example, who are trying to host events with these organisations, they may have to jump through extra hurdles via the Charity Commission in terms of, you know, if you're inviting an extremist speaker, and technically they will be on that list of extremist speakers without being able to, not being afforded to even challenge it legally because there is no legal basis. And this is exactly what we see with Prevent. You know, Prevent technically is voluntary. Doesn't mean that it hasn't caused harm to thousands of people across the UK.
I mean, we've already seen lots of people being cancelled. I mean, David and I are case in point, really. I guess this is just going to exacerbate that problem. But David, why do you think they're struggling so much then to define extremism then?
Well, because they start off with this idea that they're counteracting and countering terrorism. And, of course, that involves the commission of acts of violence, and which are, you know, identifiable as being against the law. And we have a burgeoning terrorism legislation on the statute books, and that's been expanding over the years since the first introduction of the Provincial Terrorism Act temporary provisions as it was called back in the 70s. And of course, they've then moved to this idea of non-violent extremism, or of extremism which is of a sort which might not really be terrorism, but might be leading up to terrorism. But they can't really define that, because, of course, these are actions which are not illegal, which are not violent, and which only arguably, in their own minds, have anything to do with the process of leading up to violence, the process of which they call radicalisation. And we saw this in the case of the Irish conflict, where in the 1980s, Sinn Féin were banned from television.
Yeah.
So the idea of supporting an illegal organisation, or an organisation named in this notice, Sinn Féin, was prescribed, but nobody could actually work out what supporting that organisation meant, and it was so ridiculous that the whole thing collapsed, partly as a result of the peace process too. So we'll find something similar here. If you have a definition, then when you try and work out what it actually means, it will just be absurd and will collapse. And that's why they've got this pretend definition, and also it's an attempt, as Dr. Leo's been saying, to intimidate. These are the reasons they can't define it.
Well, Dr. Leo, I mean, the earlier documents seem to suggest that Mr. Gove was considering naming a much wider group of organisations, including your own Prevent Watch and groups like Palestine Action and Friends of Al-Aqsa. I mean, what's going on here?
I mean, it's quite ridiculous. If you look at, for example, Prevent Watch, we are literally a helpline to support people who have had their rights abused. So we would never come under any definition, not that we would even respect any definition put forward for extremism in a way, because of the fact that the whole trajectory and the history of trying to define it has been nonsense,
indeed,
including this new one. But I do think it is just an attempt to intimidate and to place that idea that, you know, if you support these organisations, then there may be a problem. If you look at actually the shift from the old so-called definition of extremism to this new one, it's shifted from being very individual-based, so looking at individuals who might be extremist, to the infrastructure that supports the Muslim community. So we're now looking at institutions. And there was a report published a few years back, I can't remember which report it was, but the sole purpose of that report was to look at all of these organisations and look at their social media influence. And so if you look at some of the organisations that have made the list, those organisations have a huge impact when it comes to their social media reach. And it was by one of these right-wing think tanks, this report that was conducted. And I'm sure it has influenced, you know, how many organisations are being put up, whether they're officially named or whether it's like, oh, we might leak these organisations. Oh, no, we won't.
No,
they've already leaked it. The damage has been done, potentially. Yeah.
Well, David, excuse me, David, what's your view of the three organisations, Muslim organisations, that that were named? You know, the Muslim Association of Britain, CAGE and MEND, I mean, mentioned in the report there. I mean, perfectly respectable organisations. Just say a bit, what's your view of those organisations?
Well, I mean, the Muslim Association of Britain is an interesting organisation. It's said by Gove to be the British affiliate of the Muslim Brotherhood, supposed to put scary quotes around it. But the Muslim Association of Britain, of course, was one of the three organisations which set up the Stop the War Coalition after the invasion, in the run-up to and after the invasion of Iraq, and was core to the success of the anti-war movement, which had 2 million people on the streets in 2003. And, of course, the reason it was core to it was because it was a Muslim organisation, and that was the essential success. And that is what scared the horses in Whitehall. Muslims are getting politically active. And you see the same thing with the almost inclusion of Friends of Al-Aqsa. Friends of Al-Aqsa, of course, one of the key organisers of the massive pro-Palestine demonstrations have been since October the 7th, along with Palestine Solidarity to Stop the War. So, again, this is an attempt to take out part of the key coalition which brings together this massive wave of support for Palestine and against British foreign policy, complicity and direct engagement of the British in the genocide. So that's one thing, right? And the second thing is, of course, the other organisations. CAGE is a human rights organisation. Dr. Lely used to work there. And I've written on a number of occasions about CAGE should not be attacked. They're a human rights organisation, and it's absurd to accuse them of extremism. And then MEND, I mean, MEND are, are milder than cage are. It's completely absurd to say. I mean, the idea that MEND is an organisation which calls for a caliphate, which would itself, in my view, be completely fine, because it's not the caliphate is not any particular thing. So it's a system of government which, in which Muslim ideas might be reflected, just like Christian ideas are reflected or Hindu ideas are reflected in some other systems of government. So this is a nonsense from start to finish. And of course, the reason why they can't name these organisations outside is because they're going to be taken to court and they're going to lose.
Indeed. Well, just briefly then, because we're almost out of time, Dr. Layla, what should we then make of Mr. Gove's new policy? Briefly.
I think absolutely nothing of it other than another dog whistle politics attempt to intimidate people, not only to not support individuals who might have ideas that are very conservatively Muslim, but also to try and attack the infrastructure that helps these Muslims to participate in public life.
Indeed. And probably we should be ridiculing it whenever we get the opportunity. It is so absurd, isn't it? But thank you to our guest, Dr. Layla Eitel-Hajj, and our resident expert, Professor David Miller. So until next time, when Palestine Declassified will be back with more forensic investigations and analysis, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفران يا من ينجينا إحسان ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio, welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem. Inshallah, today we will be practicing Ayah 29 of Surah An-Nisa on page 83 of the Qur'an Kareem. Right, Fawad?
Yes.
And Ali Nasir?
Yes.
And by the way, Ali Nasir and Fawad have joined us today, and I really welcome them. And so, Fawad, Ali Nasir, ready to start our class?
Yes.
All right. So first and foremost, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, we will all listen to the recitation. Then, inshallah, a short explanation will be given. Well, then afterwards, we'll move on to the tajweed rules. All right. All right. So let's everybody listen to the recitation.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم ولا تقتلوا أنفسكم إن الله كان بكم رحيما.
That was a nice recitation. MashaAllah, MashaAllah. Let me read once. Let's see what Allah Almighty says in this ayah, and then inshallah mention some points. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah Almighty in Ayah 29 of Surah An-Nisa on page 83 of the Qur'an Kareem says,
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَأْكُلُوا أَمْوَالَكُمْ بَيْنَكُمْ بِالْبَاطِلِ إِلَّا أَنْ تَكُونَ تِجَارَةً عَنْ تَرَاضٍ مِّنْكُمْ ولا تقتلوا أنفسكم إن الله كان بكم رحيما
يا أيها الذين آمنوا. Allah Almighty talks to the believers, to the people who have faith. O you who have faith, لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم. Do not eat up your wealth, your properties. بينكم, among yourselves, بالباطل, and rightfully. Okay? بالباطل. إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم. But it should be a kind of trade by mutual consent. So if you want to have, like, if you want to use each other's properties, okay, it should be a kind of trade, for example, or any kind of like contract you have among with each other. Okay, it should be what? عن تراض منكم. That you both have to be pleased with it, satisfied, okay? You like, you cannot, it should be like with permission, for example, right? So you pick up my phone, okay? You use my phone, use the internet, for example, use the credit card, for example, yeah? If I'm not pleased with it, if I didn't give you permission, this is bilbatil, so you cannot use it, okay? This is what Allah Almighty says. وَلَا تَقْتُلُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ And do not kill yourselves. إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ بِكُمْ رَحِيمًا Indeed, Allah is most merciful to you. Alright? So, what does Allah Almighty mean by saying like, لَا تَأْكُلُوا أَمْوَالَكُمْ بَيْنَكُمْ بِالْبَاطِلِ That was one of the examples, okay? Without permission, do not pick up or use each other's properties. And there are some other examples as well, like, in terms of usury, riba, okay? Usury. For example, I've given you some money, okay? Today, you borrowed some money from me, and tomorrow I want to get back, okay? I need my money back. So I want you to give me my money plus a bit more. This is called usury, okay? So that's not what I have to get it from you, yes? That amount is extra, and that amount is haram, right? Next one, next example, for example, gambling. Do not gamble among yourselves, all right? You got some money, he got some money, okay? So do not gamble. This is called what? تَأَكُلُوا أَمْوَالَكُمْ بَيْنَكُمْ الْبَاطِلِ This is the example of eating up your properties بِالْبَاطِلِ in a batil way, unrightfully, gambling. Or for example, this examples that I'm saying, they all are from hadith that we have from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. All right. Next, for example, false claims. It's my phone. I was, for example, making wudu, right? Performing wudu there. So I just took off my jacket, okay? Hanged it over there, okay? On the hangover, okay? So Fawad came and says, got my phone, okay? Put it in his pocket. I said, hey, man, come on, that's mine. He said, no, that's mine. I said, that's mine. I just put it there. I was doing wudu. Yeah, for what? Then he says, no, it's mine. This is a false claim. Okay? This is example of batil way. So these are the examples that we don't have to, for example, or any other kind of illegitimate, okay, kind of means if you... For example, own somebody's properties without their permission. قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran. So that's all about this ayah, inshallah. Refer to the tafasir books, inshallah, to learn more about this ayah. Fawad and Ali Nasir, If you have anything to say, if not, we'll move on to the tajweed rules, inshallah, and we'll practice the recitation. Nothing to say?
No.
So, Fawad and Ali Nasir, brothers and sisters, as you're listening, now it's time to mention some tajweed rules, tajweed points, and practice the recitation. Fawad, could you please help us with the tajweed rules first? Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu. Any important point in this part?
The mad is not wajib.
Mad in the word ya ayyu is not wajib, so you can
skip it
or extend it. So yes. Could you please extend it, recite it and extend it for like 5 counts, 6 counts? Recite it, then Ali Nasir will skip it. Read it.
Ya ayyuha.
Ahsantum. Ya ayyuha. That was correct. Ali Nasir, could you skip the mad because it's optional?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ya ayyuha.
Ahsan, you just prolong the alif mat you have, okay? Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu. Or if you extend the mat, ya ayyuha alladhina amanu. So the next point, I'm sure it should be what? The pronunciations of the letters. So the first letter which is important here,
ha.
In the whole ayah, let's say first, ha,
dhal,
dhal,
hamza,
the a sound, yeah. Because it might be mixed up with the letter ayn. So, yes. And ayn is also important. Fawad, next one,
ta,
good job. Mm-hmm.
Dad,
yes,
ayn,
dad, ayn,
qaf.
Ha, yeah,
ha
and
qaf.
Ha and qaf. Yeah, so these letters are important. Pay attention to them. So, next important point. Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu la ta'akulu. So this la is important. Always you should pay attention because sometimes you might say it la ta'akulu.
Yes.
La ta'akulu. It changes the meaning. La ta'akulu means don't eat it. It's a negative. If you say la, it's an emphatic word. Okay, la. It means you should eat. Amwalakum bainakum bilbathal. Okay. So this changes meaning. Be careful about the pronunciations, about how to prolong the haraka, the vowel, or shorten the long vowel. The long vowel, yes. La ta'akulu amwalakum bainakum. Aha. Bainakum bilbathal. So in these three words, we have an important rule. Amwalakum bainakum. What's the rule?
Ikhfaf meem.
Yes. Good job. Hiding the sound of meem. Hidden meem. So, whenever, brothers and sisters, the rule says that whenever meem sakin occurs right before ba, or in another words, whenever ba, okay, ba is right after the meem sakin, okay, the rule ikhfa of meem is applied. How? You hide the sound of meem. La ta'kulu amwalakum bainakum bilbatil. And extend the sound for 2 beats, a nasal sound is also produced, okay? La ta'kulu amwalakum bainakum bilbatil. That's correct, right?
Yes.
That's it. Illa, also the mad is not wajib. The rule says if you have alif mad, waw mad, or ya mad plus hamza, look, if they both appear in the same word, in one word, the mad is
wajib.
You must stretch it for 6 counts, 5 counts. If no, they are in two words, so you are allowed to extend the sound or shorten the sound. So, illa an takuna. Here, nun sakin plus ta, you hide the sound of nun. Ikhfa of nun is applied. An takuna tijaratan an taradin. Again, an taradin. Taradim minkum. Taradim minkum. Idgham. Merging sound of tanween to the meme. Minkum, again, hiding the sound of noon.
Noon, yes.
Yes. Illa an takuna tijaratan. Right? Tijaratan, here nothing is applied, okay? You directly read the tanween.
إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم. The gym says you're allowed to stop or continue. ولا تقتلوا like bounce the sound of both. And also أنفسكم again hide. إن الله كان بكم رحيما changes to رحيما. That's all. Ready to read after me?
Yes.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Dear listeners, practice with us. يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل.
لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم.
لا تأكلوا أموالكم بينكم بالباطل إلا أن تكون تجارة عن تراض منكم.
ما شاء الله. ولا تقتلوا أنفسكم إن الله كان بكم رحيما.
ولا تقتلوا أنفسكم إن الله كان بكم رحيما.
أحسنتم. صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
ما شاء الله. الله bless you إن شاء الله. That's all for today. Brothers and sisters, stay with IRIB English Radio, inshallah. Thank you so much, Fawad and Ali Nasir. Thanks for being with us today. Inshallah, we'll be here with you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Peter Navarro, who served as White House trade advisor to former President Donald Trump, has turned himself into a federal prison in Miami, Florida. The U.S. Supreme Court has rejected Navarro's last-ditch request to avoid prison. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Peter Navarro, who served as White House trade advisor to former President Donald Trump, turned himself in to a federal prison in Miami, Florida on Tuesday, 19th of March, to begin serving a four-month sentence for defying a congressional subpoena. His surrender came just one day after Chief Justice John Roberts rejected his 11th-hour bid to remain free while he appeals his conviction for contempt of Congress. Peter Navarro was assigned to an 80-person dormitory reserved for older inmates in the Miami facility, according to a source familiar with the matter, where he's expected to have some access to email and phone. At a press conference at a strip mall across the street from the prison before turning himself in, Peter Navarro claimed his case represents an unprecedented assault on the separation of powers and executive privilege. When I walk in that prison today, the justice system, such as it is, will have done a crippling blow to the constitutional separation of powers and executive privilege, he told a group of reporters. Navarro pledged to appeal his conviction to the U.S. Supreme Court and claimed his conviction stemmed from the actions of lawmakers, prosecutors and judges who are Trump haters. There is no evidence that his prosecution was politically motivated. This is the partisan weaponization of our judicial system, Navarro said, taking issue with a ruling that barred him from presenting certain defenses to the jury that is now one of the subjects of his appeal. He's the first former White House official to go to prison after being convicted of contempt of Congress. Peter Navarro was charged and found guilty after he refused to comply with a subpoena from the House Select Committee that investigated the 6th of January 2021 attack on the Capitol. Congressional investigators were seeking documents and testimony from the former White House official tied to his post-2020 election conduct and efforts to delay the certification of Electoral College votes. He was sentenced to 4 months in prison in January. He appealed both his conviction and the trial judge's decision to enforce his sentence as the appeal is further litigated. Navarro has long held that he thought he was bound by executive privilege when he refused to comply with the committee's demands, but the judge overseeing his case ruled there was no evidence that the privilege was actually invoked. Peter Navarro has been ordered to turn himself into federal prison in Miami, Florida, by Tuesday, 19th of March. A three-judge panel on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals already rejected his bid to delay the sentence, writing he was unlikely to secure a new trial or reverse his conviction. In urging the Supreme Court to grant him emergency relief and put a hold on his surrender, Peter Navarro's lawyers argued that he is neither a flight risk nor a threat to public safety, and therefore should be allowed to remain free whilst he pursues his appeal. Dr. Navarro is the only former senior presidential advisor to be prosecuted for contempt of Congress following an assertion of executive privilege by the president that advisor served, his attorneys wrote in their request to the court. They told the justices that Navarro's prosecution for contempt of Congress violated the separation of powers doctrine, so his conviction must be reversed and the indictment against him dismissed. His legal team also argued that the questions Navarro plans to raise on appeal, which involve the assertion of executive privilege, are ones that have not been answered before and therefore warrant his release for now. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered the same story and tells us more. Peter Navarro saw his last-ditch plea to stave off prison denied by the Supreme Court on Monday, 18th of March, meaning the former aide for Donald Trump must surrender to a federal prison in Miami, Florida on Tuesday afternoon, 19th of March, to serve a four-month sentence for ignoring a subpoena from Congress. Peter Navarro filed an emergency stay appeal on Friday, 15th of March, asking the High Court to allow him to remain out of jail as he attempts to have his contempt of Congress conviction reversed on appeal. That motion was denied on Monday afternoon, less than 24 hours before the 2 p.m. deadline he was issued. If Peter Navarro serves his full four-month sentence as expected, he'll turn 75 the same week that he's set to be released. In denying the request, Chief Justice John Roberts said he saw no reason to disagree with an appeals court's decision that told Peter Navarro he must report to prison while his appeals process plays out. Chief Justice John Roberts noted that Monday's decision is distinct from his opinion on the actual appeal, which the Supreme Court has not been asked to rule on. Navarro was convicted in September after he argued unsuccessfully that Donald Trump gave him presidential immunity that would allow him to refuse to testify or provide documents to the House committee investigating the attack on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021. Peter Navarro is the second Trump advisor to be convicted for defying the January 6th committee, but he'll be the first to spend time behind bars. Steve Bannon, Donald Trump's former chief strategist, lost his contempt of Congress trial in 2022, but was allowed to remain out of jail as his appeals process plays out.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Our greetings and salams and respect and salutations, first of all, to the Imam of our time, Imam Mahdi, Ajjalallah ta'ala farajahu sharif, and to you, dear brothers and sisters, who are listening to another episode of the program, Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we try to delve a little bit deeper into challenges and problems that you, dear parents, Muslim parents, might have with regards to raising your lovely, dear teenagers. And alhamdulillah, in the studio we have our dear guest, an expert of the program, Sayyid Salman Naghawi, who is a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University. His specialty is Islamic studies. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much.
So previously we were talking about problematic teenage behavior that I think comes from a problematic household where nothing is at its own place and you've waited too long, or like you had spousal problems, or you have just had a divorce, or you're not even in a divorce, but there is like, the parents are not talking to one another, and the child was faced with a situation where in practice he or she didn't feel secure and loved, and so that anger is accumulated in that child, and so in the teenagehood it bursts out, right? And he or she has a lot of power physically, and he will talk back to you, he will stop listening to you. So we did mention a lot of points how you can restart, have a fresh start, and things that you can do. Any other points that we should take into consideration?
Yes, basically we were talking about the person who has to enforce the rules. So in my opinion, it was the father who is the person who is going to establish those rules.
It's so good to have the father establish.
Yes, rules. That is important. But the wife has to play, as I said, a role, a supportive role. And she has to reinforce that, and the children should know that their parents are unified in whatever they're doing, even behind their backs, each other's backs. You have to stand with whatever has been decided by mutually. You need to discuss. I mean, before you can establish those rules, when you can enforce those rules, you need to work them over together first. Discuss them amongst yourselves that we need to, establish those rules. I will mention them. Or even the father can ask the mother to mention them and, announce them. Sometimes mothers are more assertive in their behavior. Sometimes fathers
are. Is it good, though?
I mean,
usually in those families where the mother is too assertive and the father is the nice guy, he's the nice cop, the mom is the bad cop. Mm-hmm. But you usually you're supposed to get love and affection from the female side, and like assertiveness, authority from the male side.
That should be the case. But unfortunately, sometimes even in those relationships, which are between the spouses also. That's the problem. Yes, it goes back to that situation where if the wife is supposed to be assertive, then she's mostly because she wants to have a dominating role even over her husband. And that gives a lot of stress for the husband, because men want to be respected, and women
want to be seen.
Yes.
And recognized as the authority of the house.
Exactly. And wives want love and affection.
Right.
So if...
and respect, of course.
If it's the other way around, then, the person who is sometimes in the situation where the wife is assertive, then she does not leave any room for the respect of the father. Mm-hmm. And that diminishes the role of the father. And then he seems to be, kept out of the, loop. So the husband or the father then takes a back seat, and that is not a good situation. That's not what this. As I have always been saying, that the family unit is the basic unit of society, and when the whole society has to fall under the umbrella of the wali, then the smallest unit of the society also has to have one wali, guardian. So the mother has to reinforce that position, and she can't show to her children
that I am the wali myself.
I'm the wali myself, and I don't care what your father says.
Thank you so much. Let's go for a short break and we'll be right back.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters in faith. I hope that we are answering one of your questions and concerns that you might have with regards to your teenager. Sayyid mentioned that as the community, as the Islamic community or the Islamic Ummah has a wali or a person in charge, a leader, the house, the family, which is the smallest a cell or unit in a society, should also have a wali or a guide or a leader. Oftentimes, some women, because of what they have been experiencing in their own life with regards to the role that they have learned from their own parents, they feel that they're very bossy, they're very assertive, and they don't give the man the arena to become the assert, to assert the rules. But there's also the case that the guy, the man, the father is not well aware. He's not a manager. Like she would love to give him the authority, the position to guide the family, but he's too concerned about other things, or he's not a well-informed and educated person who should take the right step at the right time. So she gets she's like, so what should I do with this guy? He's not doing his role. So she takes precedence and she takes his role.
Of course, this is then goes back to the fact that basically a child upbringing starts from your spouse selection, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's much before the birth of a child.
And even much before the marriage.
Yes, much more with marriage, of course. So you need to, as I have been saying, that competence and being a person who carries out good deeds, a salih person, is a competent person. He or she needs to be able to basically manage her or his relationships. Management of relationships is the key. Is the key, because management entails planning, doing, checking, applying, adjusting. You plan something, do it, carry it out, check, and then you adjust yourself. And it's the same as we used to say, wise sages used to say, musharata, muraqaba, muhasaba, mu'ataba. I've mentioned that before in some of the programs, that management is general management and specialized management. Whether it is general management of human relations, every human being has to be a good manager. He or she has to be able to carry out musharata, his planning,
with regards to his own conduct and behavior.
Exactly. His conduct with respect to whom? Mm-hmm. There are four relationships, as we have stressed, right, and emphasized, with ourselves, with other
God,
human beings,
environment, and the family.
Yes. So we need to, with Allah Almighty, managing our relationships requires musharata, planning, deciding to take the proper decision, the proper steps, the appropriate steps based on our worldview, based on our ideology. We then carry them out with muraqabah, with the remembrance of Allah Almighty, that Allah Almighty is watching over us. Then we carry out muhasabah, account, make accounts of what we have done. And then we need to do ma'atabah, to correct our course if we are deviating. So this management has to be learned by human beings at a very, very early age,
which a lot of us actually don't do.
And so managing, leading, leadership qualities, managing, education, all of this is something we have been mentioning, that education is a sort of leadership.
Right.
And therefore, we need to learn these things. And then we come to, before we get married, we have these things in our minds, which we don't usually have them. Especially when we are living in Eastern societies, marriages are arranged. Of course, I'm not saying that arranged marriages are bad marriages. You need, whether it's arranged or it's someone whom you choose, but the basic thing is that we need to make the right choice in an intelligent way. We need to understand each other. We need to be able to, see whether we are compatible with each other.
Let's go for a short break and we'll be right back.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا يا مطي الخيرات يا مطي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مطي الخيرات يا مطي الخيرات.
Welcome back, you brothers and sisters. We're talking about the root of problems or rudeness or negative behavior that we witness from the side of our teenagers, and we finally got its root in the behavior of the parent themselves, where our expert Sayyid Naqawi mentioned that much before marriage actually takes place, a person has to learn to manage his or her behavior through planning, carrying out that plan, checking it, and adjusting himself or herself. Which, unfortunately, most of us, although Islam is so rich and beautiful in instructing a gorgeous life for all of us, we seem to, you know, delve so much deeper into the material realm, and we get educated with regards to physics and chemistry and our future career, and we unfortunately neglect to pay attention to our self-development, which is the essence of a righteous family. Okay, what next?
So we need to, as we said, give them a model from ourselves, and to assert that model and to show them this is, but this has to be done with love, as we have been saying. We should show them assertive behavior, but they should also know that it is because our parents love us. If they are setting these boundaries, if they are asserting them and demanding from us, it's purely because of the fact that they love us. The way we conduct ourselves, the way we enforce those rules is important, because we need to show them that it is for their sake, for their benefit, and it's pure love and compassion for them. And they should understand that it is for them that we need to model them, we need to mentor them, we need to show them that this is something which is for their benefit. And we need to, you know, give them all the time. We can't give up on them. We can't say, though, they are
a
failure.
Too late. I can't do anything. No. It's a failed case.
It's a failure. No, we have to try and try again. We need to give them a chance. Every failure leads to success. We need to back them up. You need to give them confidence. We need to support them and remind them all the time. And it's not easy to do. We can't expect results in a day or so. It takes time. We have to be patient.
Months or sometimes years.
Yes.
Thank you so much. This takes us to the end of another episode of the program Islamic Upbringing. Thank you very much for listening to us. And wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. We'll be right back.
make me the saint of the soil. From the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me the sound of the rain. From the battle and the victory. Cry to my enemy, and I cry out, cry out, cry out to the evil enemy. The flame within my heart will burn you. I cry out, and the thunder in my voice will deafen you. I cry out, tornado within my soul will roll you away. My bleeding wound once felt, though soon forgotten, but the aching sorrow in me never gone. I raise it with my anger and love, love of my land, anger at your deeds. I raise it with my anger and love, love of my land, anger at your deeds. Wounded by hatred, I'm breathing, breathing, breathing the magic perfume of my homeland, Palestine. Wounded in love, my hands turn around the branches of the olive tree, seeking peace, seeking peace.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip is now in its 171st day, with the overall death toll exceeding 32,300. UN Chief Antonio Guterres renews calls for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, saying the besieged Strip needs a flood of aid. And the main suspects of Moscow terror attack have been charged with acts of terrorism, as Russians still mourning for 137 victims of the attack.